Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. We're turning our attention to native plants right now. Native plants, especially beautiful, I think, as summer turns to fall. Great place to see the transformation is the UW Arboretum. And speaking of the Arboretum, Susan Carpenter is back with us. She's the native plant gardening curator at the Arboretum. She has some information on, of course, on native plants and on some upcoming native plant gardening conference classes and tours. We'll also talk to her about what plants look great in the garden right now. And, of course, take your questions about the maybe about the classes or maybe about your own native plants. What's your maybe what's your favorite fall spot in the UW Arboretum? Have you taken a class or tour at the facility? What's going on with your native plants? Or maybe you'd like to plant some. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email to talk@wpr.org. Susan Carpenter, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, it's great to be here, Larry.
What's looking particularly good in the native garden right now?
Oh, my gosh. We have so many flowers this year. Some of my favorites, we're right in a transition time kind of now between the very vigorous summer blooming species and then the later fall blooming species. So we still have some of those summer species blooming, but our flowering spurge is beautiful right now. We have Joe Pye weed towering tall because of the recent rains. And our native grasses, our tall grasses, are really all blooming now. So our switchgrass, our Indian grass, the big blue stem, and the cord grass, a lot of those are exceptionally tall this year. So yeah, just towering plants.
You know, I was looking at my coneflowers yesterday afternoon, and I tell you, I had, well, I don't know how many. There were bumblebees everywhere on
yes.
those coneflower plants, and they were even, there were a couple of other insects, one that I couldn't actually identify. They were on the same coneflower.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty crowded on some of those plants with all the you know, with the native plants, you do have a lot of native insects, and they are, and then the native birds come by. And so it's a really food web going on there. And we've seen a lot of bees, too. We've pretty much been able to see the rusty patch bumblebee on a pretty regular basis. That's the endangered one. And we've seen that one on the remaining culver's root that's blooming and also on our mountain mint. They really love that one, too. So just two more plants that are still in bloom.
Well, it's always fun to watch those insects working away on those plants. That's for sure. Well, you've got a native gardening conference.
We do. We have a one-day native gardening conference coming up on Sunday, September 14th, and that is an all-day conference from 8:45 in the morning till 4:30 with workshops, garden tours, lunch, and a keynote talk. So we have, I just checked the registration earlier this morning, and we have about 5 slots left for that. So I know the registration doesn't technically close until September 4th, but it's actually going to close as soon as that last slot is closed. We will have a waiting list, so people, if they aren't able to get into the conference and they want to attend, we generally do dip into that waiting list, so there'll be instructions on our website as to how to go about getting on that waiting list. But it's a really wonderful conference. We have it in the gardens. We have a lot of the activities. We have an indoor portion and then an outdoor portion. The garden in September is just beautiful, and it's fall. And all the fall colors and all the fall blooming. So
it's a really fun day, and we really enjoy, we've got experienced gardeners, but also beginners. So it's really, we really try to provide something for everyone.
Yeah, it's great. And registration, you need to register.
Yes, through our website, arboretum.wisc.edu.
And there's a fee for it.
There is. It's now, we're out of the early bird period. So it's $70 for a regular registration, and students, it's $35.
So it's still a pretty good price when you consider there's also lunch involved.
Yes, there's lunch involved.
Well, we'll talk some more about the some of the areas. Maybe we could just do that. What are some of the sessions? Let's talk.
Okay, yeah. Some of our sessions include designing a native garden. So if you're thinking about the design aspect of it, and then we have planting and managing, which is kind of the actual on the ground kind of work and tips for that. We have native trees and shrubs, which is a whole its own session. Native plant garden tour. I'm going through some of these sessions that are, some of them are full, so I wouldn't want to encourage people for that. We have one special one this year called Nature Journaling, and that is a really wonderful activity where you'll actually be learning about nature journaling, but also doing some nature journaling outdoors. So that's going to be fun. And I'm doing a session called Garden Questions, which I'm describing to people as it's a session, a whole session where you could come and people will be bringing their own questions. So it's a little bit like talking with you, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
And their own specific questions about their garden, and then that will be in a group discussed so that we offer, suggestions and, maybe answers for them, maybe more questions. But that will be to address, for everyone to learn from everyone else's experience in that session. So it'll be a rather small session to keep it a good conversation going amongst everyone.
Yeah. That's do people bring their own plants sometimes and wonder, why is this so sickly looking or anything?
Well,
like,
mostly people bring plants to find out, to verify IDs.
Ah.
And that's fine, too. If people want to do that, we can certainly do that. But we'll be in touch with the people who sign up for that session, specifically with some specific, suggestions to make the most of the day.
I was kind of intrigued by the nature journaling, and you've got a couple of people leading that, Ann Pierce and Maddie Smith.
Yes, our education team here has been, they've had experience leading these workshops before, not specifically for gardeners, so they're really excited to kind of tailor this session to the garden itself.
That is very, very cool. That'd be fun to get involved in that one.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the, I know you have a lot of classes over the course of year. What are some of the highlights coming up in the next month or two?
Well, some of the things that are coming up in September and October that are free would be the fall garden tours, and those are on, we have three more in our garden tour series this year. So on September 20th, we'll have the native plant garden. That'll be a two-hour tour of the fall attractions in the native plant garden. So we'll see the things that we'd expect to see, and I'm sure we'll see some surprises. And then on October 11th, we switch over to the horticultural collection. And our horticultural assistant will lead a tour on conifers, and that's on our conifer collection, which is a spectacular collection. And then on October 18th, our curator, David Stevens, will offer a two-hour tour on fall color. And that will range to wherever he takes you. It'll be wonderful.
Well, there's bound to be a lot of color for sure at that time of the year. It's probably the perfect time of the year.
Absolutely. That's why we schedule it then. It'll be almost too much to see in 2 hours for sure.
I always enjoy driving along the Beltline there.
Yes.
In the fall. In fact, I've got to pay attention to my driving, but the color along the edge there of the Arboretum where it meets the Beltline is always really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, and then we have some other, I mean, our website has been updated with everything through the end of November in terms of events. So there's, I know there's a fall equinox walk, a night walk that requires registration, but it's free. So just people should check into that pretty soon if they want to attend that one. And then there are some tours of the Lost City, which is always popular. That's getting on into October. So those also require Eventbrite registration, but all the information is in our on our website.
Yeah. Well, that Lost City, give the thumbnail version of what was going on there, with the history of that.
Yeah. Well, the Lost City refers to the housing, a housing development that never really got all the way off the ground. And there's still some, but there's still, you know, they were ambitious about it. So many lots were sold and some houses were, I mean, some houses were constructed. Those are not in the Arboretum, but some other houses that are within the Arboretum's boundaries now were not really finished, or just the foundation was there. So this is a chance for the naturalists who are well versed in this history to show people kind of where was the road, what was the story of this this housing development that never, you know, that never really happened, and just to see, to kind of read the landscape, and to also, of course, you'll be seeing on that tour, you'll be seeing a lot of, you know, late October scenery, you know, like sights and interesting things along the way. So it's not too far from the Arboretum, but it does require a registration for that tour on Eventbrite.
Susan Carpenter, our guest today, the native plant garden curator at the UW-Madison Arboretum. Questions for her? Maybe about native plants, maybe about the courses. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on WPR News. We're taking a look at native plants and the UW Arboretum today with Susan Carpenter, who is our native plant garden curator at the UW-Madison Arboretum. It's always great to have her come by and talk native plants with her. You can join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@WPR.org. And let's take a call. Daniel in Stevens Point, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Larry. I've had a prairie garden for nearly 25 years. And in the past few years, the tall grasses, the big blue stem and the Indian grass have gotten out of control. And it's a small area, and I don't know how to beat them back and maybe replace them with some forbs or perhaps some shorter grasses like little blue stem.
Yeah.
Do you have other plants growing among them, or is it pretty much just the solid grasses?
Well, there are some. I have actually some very healthy lupin in that area, but as summer progresses, there is some lead plant in there that's doing very well. But in terms of some of the other forbs, like black-eyed Susans or some of the other coneflowers, not that much.
Mm-hmm. I can't say for sure if this would work, but one thing we do is with tall grasses, you said it wasn't a very large area, we have some gardens where the tall grasses have seeded in, and of course we need to keep the area short because of the parking lot and the visibility and so forth. So we actually trim them down to the ground. Now in your case, you don't have an army of volunteers helping you. So what you might do when the grasses are coming up, if you have patches that are pretty much just solid grass, take a weed whacker and cut them down to the ground. And that will allow any, that would, you know, obviously that would, if it's solid there, that might allow other plants to, you know, to seed there, you know, to get started. It'd be a disturbance, basically. When we're trimming, we can be a little more selective because we, you know, we're just cutting them out. We are leaving the other plants. We have plenty of other plants growing within them. Do you burn the area?
No, that's part of the problem, too. It's, we're in the city of Stevens Point.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not suggesting to burn it because the burning will usually tend to increase the grasses that you're talking about. But we have had other questions like this where a grass took over an entire yard planting. And the person, basically what we recommended was the person mow it down. Just mow it down and keep weakening the tall grass so that you could then introduce other plants within it and, you know, get a more and try to get a more even diversity and introduction of other plants there.
So the weed whacker for now, though?
Well, what we do is just trim them. I mean, we trim them right at the ground we're cutting them with pruners, but we trim them right at the ground, and then the next time that bunch of grass comes up, it's weaker than it was.
Oh,
and then we
okay.
do it again, and then there's room for the other plants.
And do you then do you kind of rake that stuff out, or do you just?
Oh yeah, we pull it off if it's going to smother the other plants. Yeah.
Yeah. Daniel, give that a shot. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Hope it works.
Yeah, I hope it works too. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email to talk@wpr.org. Renee in Rice Lake emailed to ask if any native plants strangle out other native plants or do they learn to coexist. Renee takes part in the Monarch Watch tagging program through the University of Kansas, and they have encouraged milkweed to grow in their native beds, and they are becoming prolific. Renee's wondering if they will take over the other plants as well as the non-natives planted with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as the milkweed is concerned, we've never planted it common milkweed on purpose in our gardens, but we have it. It comes in on its own, and it does spread by underground stems, so it will spread around in the area. But I don't notice that it takes over. So it grows among other plants. It grows with other plants. It might seem like there's a lot of it, but the other plants don't seem to be suffering from, you know, as long as you have a lot of other kinds of plants. So I would keep, and then also they don't, unlike the grasses that we were just talking about, they don't shade everything around them. So there's room for other plants to be growing right next to them throughout the bed. It is important to have all that milkweed because of the monarch, you know, for the monarch caterpillars to have their food. But you need other plants as well for the monarchs to nectar on, because like right now there's very little milkweed blooming. They don't just visit milkweed flowers. They visit lots of other flowers. And right now we have the monarchs that are in our garden are visiting the liatris, particularly the meadow blazing star is their favorite. And every day there are some flying around visiting that plant. So I would recommend putting some of that in also to go along with the good habitat that you're giving the caterpillars there, Renee. So I would encourage you just to plant more native plants in the area if there aren't very many yet. And if you feel that the milkweed is taking over, I think just nestling other plants with it will work well.
How do those, I've often wondered about the native milkweed or the kind of wild milkweed that we, how, I have some that appeared in my garden. I hadn't been in there, had never been in there, mm-hmm. and suddenly there they were. And I thought, how in the heck did they land in there?
Well, it has a wind-blown seed, so those pods that are developing right now on them, when those split open, each seed has a fluffy wing on it, and it can fly a long way. And if you're collecting the seed, we actually recommend, like someone who's growing it might want to collect the seed of their butterfly weed or their swamp milkweed, or even common milkweed. If you wait until the pods are mature, not quite split open yet, but just about to, and then you split them open and hold on to all that fluffy stuff with your thumb, you can scrape off the seeds into a bucket or a cup without getting the fluff going everywhere. And that way you'll have more control over where the seeds are going. But yeah, they can fly in from everywhere. They do it here all the time. And then they move around, and sometimes you'll have a big clump of it, and then it'll be there for a few years, and then the next year, suddenly it's not there anymore. So they are moving around all the time. That's just a neat thing about native gardens. The plants are always on the move and making seeds and finding the place where they can do best.
Oh, man. You mentioned earlier, sort of in passing, you mentioned volunteers when you were talking to another caller. And like most gardens, the Arboretum really relies on volunteers. What are some ways to help the facility?
Well, we do have a wonderful volunteer program here, and all kinds of different possibilities for people at different openings for volunteers. So on our website, we have a section called Get Involved, and there's a volunteer tab there, and that will be laying out the different opportunities there are. So I work with volunteers in the Native Plant Garden. We have volunteers in the Horticultural Collection, and each program has its own schedule and its own, you know, kind of goals and, opportunities for people to join in. We have Saturday work parties that are restoration for the bigger part of the arboretum, and that's a real variety of, you know, weed control, invasive species control, but it's a great learning opportunity, and that really helps us. So those are just a drop-in program on Saturday mornings from 9 to noon, and they're located in different places for each week of the month, so just check our website again, and it's really a great opportunity, you know, to see different areas of the arboretum and different restoration projects that are going on. We also have indoor volunteering, like reception desk, and right now, today is our last day of summer camp for this year, but we have volunteers who've been helping out with the summer camp. So there's something for everybody.
there sure is. Well, many people don't realize that the arboretum features artists every year. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. We have a hallway gallery in our visitor center, and that's a pretty substantial hallway. So there's a juried selection process for the entries, and artists can submit their work, you know, their portfolio for that process. And then we have each artist then for the following year, for the coming year, would have a 2-month time slot, and so their work is mounted for 2 months, and then everyone who comes into the visitor center can enjoy it during that time, and can, you know, the artwork always has a nature theme, and but it can be a lot of different media: photography, fabric art, painting, all types of prints, all types of different art is acceptable. So that's a really nice thing. And it's really nice to come, for visitors to come every couple of months and make sure you don't miss one of those exhibits.
Yeah, and they're typically beautiful.
They're wonderful.
Wonderful, wonderful exhibits. John has emailed us a little off, but the topic maybe, but John was asking if over-the-top grass killers hurt daylilies. I'm not sure.
I haven't had to deal with daylilies in the garden that I work on here, but word gets back to me from people who do deal with daylilies that not very much harms them.
Yeah, yeah.
They're usually rooting them out and repeatedly.
Nancy in La Crosse has a question. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, thank you for your guest this time. I have a native prairie, and it's on a hillside. And one of my most favorite plants, Royal Catchfly, I'm trying to encourage its growth, and I have the same syndrome as they talked about earlier about tall plants. They kind of fall over. And I was wondering if you had any tips on encouraging the Royal Catchfly. It seems like a weak stalk that it grows on.
Yes, it seems I haven't gardened with that plant particularly. I'm familiar with what it looks like. It seems to me that it might be one it does, it's actually, we don't want plants that will overtop it and like completely cover it up, but it seems as though it's a plant that does grow well in community. It wouldn't grow as well by itself. So I would look for plants that are associates of it where it would be growing naturally, and maybe shorter plants. So if you could, if you have like tall grasses growing around it, I mean, maybe that's not the situation, but if just to encourage plants that are on the same scale as it, as far as what to plant or what to maybe change up around it.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, does it reseed itself or?
It does a little, and mm-hmm. I do have it supported, the plants that it helps me to identify where they're at. But I was wondering about in the fall, after the frost, the mm-hmm. seed. Is mm-hmm. that an effective way also to have it spread?
I would imagine, but as I said, I have never gardened, you know, particularly with that plant. You might be able to check more information about the cultivation of it through like the Native Prairie Nursery website or catalog and see what they recommend about the, you know, what the dormancy, like does it have a stratification requirement, and just be maybe do some, if that's the case, do some sowing of it in a tray, a winter sowing of it in a tray, so that you know where the seedlings are, you know, next spring, and then you could move them around or, you know, propagate them a little bit yourself, so that you have a good supply of plants.
Makes good sense. Nancy, thank you very much for calling. And Susan, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. We'll look forward to your next visit. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Larry.
Susan Carpenter, Native Plant Garden Curator at the UW-Madison Arboretum, and the new UW Arboretum Director, Pat Bolin, will be on the show next Wednesday, as a matter of fact. Always great to have you listening in. Great to have a great team. Our peach expert, Clara Neipert, one of them, Joel Patnod. Our technical directors, Lee Raybert and Jeff Robbins. Our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. I have a wonderful time this afternoon listening in to all the other good programs. I'm Larry Mueller.